Stuff Is Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good. Aiden Brown.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast. Ben Vallis here. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. A very chill, very casual All-Star break podcast for you today. We'll get to Tatum and Brown's involvement in the All-Star weekend, but then we're heading straight to the Reddit recap, where we'll discuss some of the best posts from the past week, including why would a guy like Harrison Barnes boost this team's title chances when Gordon Hayward couldn't? Plus Paul Pierce's Hall of Fame finalist nomination and more. Joining us, our USA correspondent, the man, the myth, Larbird33. How are things in the USA? What can you report?
I'm planning my vacation finally. I finally decided to, you know, I've been sitting in this office for months and months without getting out. We don't have it like you do have in Australia, where you can actually live a normal life. We're still, at least in Seattle, we're still pretty locked down for the most part.
Right.
So I'm planning a vacation. Going to go to Maui at the end of the month. Going to go to Hawaii. So hopefully that works out well and I don't get COVID and, you know, I get to have a little bit of relaxing time. So that's what I've been doing for the last few days,
awesome,
is planning that all out.
And is that's going to be your first time, I'm guessing, to an airport or sort of anywhere really outside of like home and the grocery store, I'm guessing?
Yeah, for the most part.
Jesus.
They're doing this thing, actually. So one fun thing we did out here, again, it's like we just have to improvise and find sort of different types of activities. So where the Seahawks play, the field there, they're doing this like outdoor restaurant thing where they have all these different chefs locally that, you know, are actually serving. I think it's called like Farm to Field or something. So we did that. That was pretty fun. We got to go sit in the middle where the Seahawks play and have some dinner. But beyond that, man, I'm just like looking forward to when I can go back to like concerts and see shows and go to Comic Cons and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And Seattle, like where you are, man, like it's great, you know, well-known great music scene there in Seattle. So I hope that for you as well, man, because it must have felt like a very, very long year and then some at this point.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Looking forward to things getting back to normal a bit.
Yeah, well,
how's things out there?
I went into the office today and worked. So things are, like, I guess, a little bit back to normal. It's still, like, you still have to wear masks on the train and public transport and things like that. And like, it's gotten to the point where people are so comfortable that people aren't wearing masks, even though they'll be fined if they're caught not wearing masks. So there's this level of complacency that I'm becoming uncomfortable with, because you get one case out there, one person not giving a shit, spreading it, and suddenly we're all locked down again. So it's gotten to the point where like people are taking it for granted. That frustrates me, especially hearing about your situation and other people around the world where like it's still, you know, well before getting to that point. So things are good now. But, you know, it's all on a knife's edge, right? Things could be bad again.
2022, I think that's when we're going to finally try to go to Australia. So hopefully things are normal to the point where we can actually go on a big trip like that. So we're planning it out.
live Celtics Reddit podcast.
Right, do it in person.
In the Sydney studios. Look, All-Star weekend. It has come and gone. Future Celtic Nikola Vucevic was the runner-up in the skills challenge. Current Celtics Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown did not win the three-point contest, but totally held their own in the big event, which was awesome. Larbird, I think let's go shot for shot here, starting with you. What were your favorite moments from All-Star Weekend?
Well, I didn't watch, to be honest with you, I didn't watch the actual game, but it's a little bit... So I didn't actually see the game, but I did watch the three-point shootout. I thought that was fun, at least for a little bit. We got Tatum into the final three, so that was fun. So beyond that, Ben, you're gonna have to carry me on that one.
I'm gonna have to carry the segment. That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. I watched the game and I watched Timmy's highlights afterwards, which were awesome and sort of encapsulated a video version of this segment, because obviously our favorite moments were everything, including Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I do have a few though. Jaylen Brown somehow, and you'll have seen this watching the three-point competition there, Larbo, Jaylen Brown somehow caught ball watching even in the three-point competition, which I thought was amazing. Jaylen Brown was paying $8.50 to win the three-point contest, so naturally I put like $10 on it, thinking I was going to win $85. No, not even close. The countdown begins, 3, 2, 1, a few more seconds come off the clock and Jaylen Brown is just standing there like staring at the ground, and it's very typical with what we see happen on defense for Jaylen Brown in an actual game. So I thought there were some interesting parallels there, and it was very sort of typical Jaylen. Did you catch that moment, Larbird?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They've inflated the actual point totals of the 3-point shooting contest now because of all the balls. So at first I was like, oh, 17. That's not bad. That's a pretty good score. And then I looked back and I was like, oh, actually, inflation. It's 3-point shootout inflation. That's actually pretty bad these days. But I don't know. It was just fun to see him out there.
yeah, for sure. Tatum wearing the earrings to the 3-point contest. I don't know if I've seen that before. Obviously, we've seen like Larry Bird with the jacket and everything. Don't know if we've seen anyone wearing the sleeper, basically the Michael Jordan earrings, which I thought was weird. Getting to the game itself, Tatum's early slam, I thought, and just in general, Tatum and Brown like completely looking like they belonged in the game, which was awesome. User Jason Tatum before MVP wrote, Tatum was the only player on Team KD that has a positive plus minus for the plus +7, which is, I don't know, it's kind of typical Tatum,
plus
right?
Like in a losing game.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a, like they lost by like 20 points or whatever it was. So for Tatum to come away, and he had like 7 assists and 4 steals. And I don't know, it was a weirdly classic Tatum line, I guess, in a loss, if you want to think about recent Celtics moments. I don't know. I think just walking away from it, the fact that they didn't seem like the young guys or the new guys, even in Jaylen Brown's case, 22 points, hit 5 threes, had that crazy turnaround, like 360 no-scope, 3 in the corner. They just totally looked like they belonged. And I think that's something, you know, as diehard fans, everyone felt a sense of pride about. Yep. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that for sure. I was trying to, before this, I didn't have much time before our podcast here. I was trying to look up what kind of stats Pierce and Antoine Walker put up in their All-Star games, but I couldn't find a really easy method of doing it. I would have had to go to like each like actual game log and look at them. But I have a vague memory of them not really putting up standout stats like that. Like, I don't think they really put up like 20 plus. So to see Brown putting that up in his first All-Star game was pretty cool. It's like, yeah, he definitely belongs. Same with Tatum. You know, it's, you know, we've had All-Stars like Horford to do like nothing in the All-Star game. So those guys they're legit All-Stars. I mean, it's great. We have two legit All-Stars.
I'm looking it up. So 2003 All-Star game was Paul Pierce's second All-Star game. So to hold on to the sort of Pierce Tatum comparison there. So starters in the West.
I'm excited about this first. I'm excited because I want to see if my memory's completely failing.
Yeah, right.
Keep going.
So just to set like the table here, the starters in the West: KG, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Steve Francis, and Yao Ming. And the East: Allen Iverson, Tracy McGrady, MJ. So Wizards MJ, Jermaine O'Neal, and Ben Wallace. And then the reserves there in the East is Paul Pierce. He played 18 minutes, shot 4 of 11. 0-for-5 from 3 for 8 points, 4 steals. Okay, there's the parallel. and 3 assists. So not nearly the same showing in his All-Star game there, his second All-Star game. I mean, you could argue that, you know, Allen Iverson, T-Mac, Michael Jordan, although well beyond his prime. I don't know. Yeah. I guess you could argue there's more talent in Kevin Durant's team this year than there was in Michael Jordan's team in 2003. I don't know. Interesting.
It's possible.
Interesting. Okay, so you didn't watch the game, Larbert, so there's not a lot of other moments, I think, that we can glean from you. I was going to ask you...
Yeah, I always have, like, the grandness of intentions of watching the All-Star game, and then I just never actually watch it. I consistently watch the dunk contest and the three-point shootout and all that, but the actual game itself... And I kind of like feel bad because last year I think they actually had a great All-Star game towards the end. It was really exciting, but I missed that one too. So that's my bad. That's my bad. I just keep missing it.
It is an all-time like background thing to have on, right? Like, I'm going to put the All-Star game on and get a bunch of actual shit done that I need to get done in my life. I think that's probably something a lot of people can say. And, you know, like we're doing a podcast this weekend because we like doing podcasts and we wanted to put something out. There's not a whole lot of stuff to talk about. The All-Star game happened, so we're doing our best.
I think we should just talk about Top Shot.
Oh, we're getting there. So I know you didn't watch the game, but I was going to ask you if there were any moments that you absolutely hated. I have only one, but I want to ask you first.
No, not really.
Okay.
I was quite distracted that night, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff going on, but so I hated that, but no, not that, not the actual game.
Sure. Okay. So if you're wondering what Larbird's talking about there, I'm just going to say that we are no longer affiliated with Celtics Life. We're very thankful that they had us on their platform, but due to creative differences, we've parted ways, which is fine, and good luck to those guys. My moment that I hated, the worst moment, was seeing Jaylen Brown in what was basically a Pacers jersey, and as a unhealthily subscribed Celtics fan, that just kind of made me feel uneasy. That's all I got. Otherwise, I had a great time.
I could have been worse. It could have been like Lakers jerseys, you know?
yeah, absolutely. Juice Tatum. I just had a note here to bring this up. Juice Tatum, he's 3 years old, and he's like 6 foot tall already. If you wanted to get an idea of what it would look like if Tatum played with Isaiah Thomas, just look at Tatum and Juice Tatum on the floor together.
I have a nephew. My wife's stepsister has a kid, and her husband is like 6'7", and he's now a little over a year, and I feel like he's like half my size already, this little kid. So it's the same thing with Deuce. I was like, man, these guys, man, so big. I bet you Deuce is taller than me already.
Yeah, he's a big boy. But
I'm only 5'7", people. I'm a short person. I'm 5'7", so the guys...
Yeah. I'm not much taller than you.
But does that translate to Australian? 5'7"? Does that make sense?
Australian NBA fans? Yeah, absolutely. Like, I learned how to talk height in feet and inches long before I learned in centimeters. So
great.
Even now, like, I'll go to the doctors and they'll ask me, and I'll tell them in feet, and they're like, what is that in centimeters? So it's a symptom of being an NBA awesome. Fan long before you learned the metric system. sticking with favorite moments, or sticking with the favorite moments angle, we're exactly halfway through the season, Larbert, if you can believe it. What's been your favorite moment or moments or stretches of moments of the season so far?
I think my favorite moment so far has been, the multiple Tatum game winners. He's technically had, I think, three now. Those are pretty awesome. And I would say, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but when Brown had that, what do you have, like 45? Did he have 45 in his peak game?
Might have been 42.
42? Okay, yeah. So he had 42, and then
in that range.
Like a week later, Tatum almost, you know, got to the point where he surpassed that. That was a pretty fun stretch right
there. The Bird-McHale parallel.
yeah, the Bird-McHale thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nice.
But that's been the highlight for me. What about you?
Basically, just the entire pre-Marcus Smart injury stretch. So I think we were, 8-3? We had the first seed, like, early in the season. It was pre-COVID Tatum, pre-de-injury Jaylen Brown. They both looked absolutely amazing, and we were living in this fantasy land of, like, imagine when Kemba Walker comes back, not knowing how much of a shit show that would end up being for a variety of reasons, of course. Marcus Smart, calf, guitar string break. Tatum gets COVID. Brown with the knee because of his overuse, and things go in another direction. But early on there, you know, like, we beat Giannis and the Bucks with that game winner, like you mentioned, and it was just a nice stretch there where both Tatum and Brown, both the Jays, looked like they had really taken that sort of, like, almost like that 2K, NBA 2K progression where, like, automatically end one season, start another one, and, like, all their stats bump up. Kind of looked like that. Obviously, we've come down to earth a little bit now, but that was a nice little pocket of time to live in. In terms of an actual moment, though, Tatum's falling out of bounds behind the back full court assist to Time Lord against the Lakers. It's actually a Top Shot moment that I purchased very recently for $22. I'm a very, very proud owner of this Top Shot moment. Larbird, how are you in the Top Shot game? Are you interested in Top Shot at all?
Top Shot's so dumb.
I ask you sarcastically because
it's so dumb, but I love it. Like, I didn't know about Top Shot until actually someone on Reddit had posted a link of Taco Fall buying one, and they were like, what the hell is this? and my first reaction to it was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
If anyone's listening to this and doesn't know what it is, let me see if I can describe it. It's basically digital trading cards or virtual
collectibles.
And it's collectibles. Yeah. I mean, they're trading cards, but they're highlights, they're plays. But I think it's easier to describe it to people as basically collectible cards. They're backed by blockchain, so the rarity of them is backed by that. And like, you can buy, theoretically, you can buy a pack, but buying a pack of these cards is like $10. But there's so many people, there's like hundreds of thousands of people that want these packs, and they usually do these drops where there's only like maybe 5,000 to 60,000. You have to like wait in line, and like my first four times trying to get a pack, I struck out. Finally got a pack the same time you got a pack. Mm-hmm. I think that was $14. And the cards themselves, or the collectibles, or the moments, I guess they're called, they're selling for obscene amounts. They're like crazy. The amounts, like, when I bought that $14 pack, the cheapest card you could buy was $14, and you get three of them. And my, I ended up with the Ben Simmons card that I immediately sold for $170. And then you ended up with, was it the Harden card or the Harden moment? I keep calling them cards, but
yeah. James Harden handles. So it's like Harden on the Nets. So it's a recent moment. And I pulled it from sort of the only pack that I've been able to buy other than the pre-order, which I think we get soon. And just got lucky. I was like, oh, James Harden, that looks like, you know, could be worth something. And then checked the market and, you know, it's sort of gone up and down between 100 to 350 US dollars. And I think it's even higher than that now.
Yeah.
So
am I...
Pretty
my
happy
old
with that.
Roommate, my old roommate is obsessed with it right now too, and he just from the same pack, he ended up getting a Giannis card that's now selling for over 400. You two are both sitting on your cards. I just sold that shit. I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like as they release more and more, the price will go down. But I'm like, yeah. At the very least, I'll get back my initial investment, and now I can actually buy cards and or buy moments and see where they go. But
yeah.
It's funny. It's just a funny thing.
It is, and my theory with holding on to the card, and I come into this with no real financial knowledge or success ever in my life, but that holding on to it for, you know, if I sold it now, great, I make a bit of money, that's good, I can buy myself a nice pair of shoes or whatever. Maybe if I hold on to it for a year or two, it actually balloons into something actually valuable that I can translate into, you know, something that will have a sort of a tangible effect on my life financially. But it's fun. It's fun. I bought that Tatum moment yesterday for $22. There's a Jaylen Brown dunk on the Warriors that I've got my eye on as well, which is going for about $25. And I don't know what it is. I was trying to explain it to my dad recently when I was up visiting them. And my dad worked in educational technology for most of his life and has always been like a pretty healthy adopter of new technologies. And this is the first thing. He's 65 now. And this is the first technological thing that I explained to him that just went completely over his head. And he was like, I don't know what you're getting yourself into there, mate, but like this sounds like a waste of money. Be careful. And I was like, no, like there's a legit market for this. I can't really tell you why. The only reason that there's value is because there's a market for it and people for some reason covet these moments, but it's a real thing. NFTs are a real thing. Blockchain is a real thing. Like get on this. And he was just like, no, sorry, you're crazy. So interesting times.
I feel like the whole thing is like some kind of money laundering scheme, but no, I mean, the only way I've been able to sort of describe it. So I downloaded the NBA 2K mobile app because a friend of mine actually worked on designing that game. And I was just curious about it. I actually was at one point considering working for that company that makes that mobile game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, all that mobile game is a digital trading card collecting game where you just like collect digital cards. And I never put a cent into it, but I know, you know, maybe I'm not supposed to know this, but I know that there are people who played that were spending like thousands and thousands of dollars in microtransactions just to improve their chances of getting these cards. And there's no like real value to them. Like you can't sell those cards. You just would get them in the game. And then every year you get a new version of the game and start over from scratch. It's just keep that, like that thirst to collect, that thirst to get a rare card. So I get it from that standpoint. I'm like, well, there's obviously like this urge to collect these things. And the value of actual collectible cards is arbitrary as is. I mean, they're just pieces of cardboard. So I get it. I mean, I've been trying to explain it to people. I'm like, listen, I cashed out already. I've 10x'd my investment. I don't know how much I'll actually get into it beyond that. It's just interesting to just like play with it because it's so brand new. But yeah, most of the people I'm trying to explain it to are like, that's the stupidest thing. I'm like, you're not wrong.
yeah I mean, my wife was completely against it, and then when I said I spent $14 on a pack and pulled something that was worth $300 US, and you know the US dollar is worth a bit more than the Aussie dollar, she was like, okay, I don't get it, but I'm happy for you to keep playing. Whatever you're doing, it seems to be working, so good
it
luck.
Sounds like we're promoting Top Shot. Like we're not getting paid from Top Shot. It's just an interesting thing. I think a lot of fans right now are playing this right now, so
oh yeah,
it's kind of interesting, but
yep, it's just a thing. And it's All-Star break, there's no games for us to talk about, so we're just you know, chewing the fat here. But with that, we're going to take a very quick break and be back in a moment for the Reddit recap. Welcome back. This is the Reddit recap. Larbird33, I've compiled a short list of recent Celtics Reddit posts. I'm going to throw them at you. We want your instinctual reactions to them, and then we're just going to go from there. So starting with a post from user jcarmona24, they asked, why would a lesser performing Harrison Barnes get the Celtics to the NBA Finals when Gordon Hayward could not?
Well, that one's easy because Hayward never played in the playoffs. I mean, we've talked about that now many times, but just in case someone's tuning in for the first time and hasn't thought about it, Gordon Hayward played one healthy playoff game his entire tenure for the Celtics. He missed his entire first year in the playoffs because he was hurt. So we went to the Eastern Conference Finals in spite of that. Then he was a shadow of himself the next year. And it was obvious he was coming off the bench. Didn't do much at all during the playoffs. Then the next year, he was actually healthy and actually played at a high level during a regular season. Played one healthy game, put up 12 points, got hurt, missed our entire run to the Eastern Conference Finals. And by the time he came back, it was clear he was on one leg. So the idea of getting someone like Barnes by default is an upgrade over not having anyone. We didn't have Hayward. So that's an easy one right there for sure.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. There's an interesting comment on that thread by user Zgamer, or Zgamer for you Americans out there, 200, who writes, as someone who would gladly do a trade of Nesmith and a first for Barnes, I'll explain to you my reasoning. Number one, saying that Barnes wouldn't get us over the hump when Hayward couldn't isn't a fair statement, because a healthy Barnes is much better than an injured Hayward we had for a small amount of time in the playoffs. So exactly what you said there, Larbird.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about it, because if you're following any of the articles that are coming out this week, it's sounding more and more like he's our main target.
Oh, yeah.
I listened to an interview with Brian Scalabrine. I don't know if you caught that one. I think it was a post-game interview, and he was like, it's absolutely Barnes is our target. Mm-hmm. And he was basically saying, you're going to hear stuff about Detroit, like Jeremy Grant. You're going to hear stuff about us going after guys in Orlando. And that's all a smokescreen. They still want Barnes. And I think that's probably true. I even before hearing that from Scal, that was the assumption I got, which is that we're going to start hearing, like, it's posturing season. We're entering posturing season now. So you'll hear about maybe us trying to go after Evan Fournier. And that's just to, like, drive down the price of Barnes. It sounds like Barnes is probably going to get moved. So, yeah, it's a good potential fit. I was reading Boston.com. Tom Westerholm did two articles this week. One was about Vucevic and one was about Barnes. He does a really good deep dive into both and, like, why would you want to get them, what the actual price would be. So I'd recommend people check those out if they want to see more about it. But
yeah,
it does sound like Barnes is the guy. Who was the comment that said he'd be happy to give up Nesmith in a first? Who said that?
That's Zgamer200. They also said that, we had a lot of internal improvement since the Eastern Conference Finals. Tatum has been in a slump post-COVID, but his passing continues to come along, and presumably Tatum will be healthier come the playoffs. Brown and Time Lord have both improved quite a bit this season, and so have Tyus and Ojale. Kemba should also be better and actually hitting threes, assuming he stays healthy. Which is to say that the team outside of the departure of Gordon Hayward is actually better. So the introduction of a guy like Barnes would allow Tatum and Brown to put more energy into their defense, which has noticeably slipped this season. The extra 15 to 20 points per game Barnes would provide, combined with the return of Smart to take on some of the playmaking duties, should also help the Jays return to two-way excellence.
Yeah, it's a good fit. Like, you know, Brooklyn's a monster, and they have now tons of all-star talent. But if we're looking at about, like, building a team that makes sense, Barnes does make sense as a third guy alongside the Jays. And I've been really multiple times on here, I've been advocating about how much I don't want us to give up on Nesmith and how he can become a potential really good player down the road. But I don't necessarily hate the idea of giving up Nesmith for Barnes, just as a big picture thing. Like, if you were going to tell me on draft night we were trading that pick for Harrison Barnes, I probably would have been okay with it.
Yeah.
And then also he's got this contract where he's making, I think, $22 million, or it's $22 million this season, and it declines in the next couple of years, but it's around $20 million. And I mean, he aligns those 3 years as a decent contract. It's not like a hugely overexpensive contract for him. It aligns with Kemba's 3 years left on his deal. And I could see, you know, the big picture, if we're thinking about big picture, Barnes could help a ton in the short term. And then he could also be someone that, you know, if we try to go after someone like Bradley Beal in the offseason, maybe you build a package around Barnes. Like, he's a valuable talent.
Yeah.
And he has that salary. So. Yeah, I'm not totally against it. I don't know exactly what the trade value, what the trade offer would be and what they're asking, but I'm very confident that we could get Barnes. It just might be a little bit out of what we want to put up to get him.
I think it's absolutely the best move that the Celtics could make. You mentioned his declining contract. So yeah, $22 million this year, then $20 million, and then $18 million in the 2022-23 season. So a declining contract, and just the idea of acquiring someone with this TPE, where, like, the amount of time that we'd have that player under contract, like, sort of goes beyond what the Hayward contract was. So I think it adds some value there in that, okay, like we've made this decision. We've got a very impactful, a very, you know, higher contributing player. And we've got time to figure out, you know, whether they work for us, whether we should move them again, like you said, Larbird. It just kind of extends the clock a little bit and gives us that extra contribution on the court, which is great, as opposed to acquiring, you know, an expiring contract, which might be great for the season. But as a lot of people have pointed out, this season might not really be the one to shoot for with all the talent in the East. Harrison Barnes also traveled to Australia and to China last year or the year before last with Kemba Walker, with Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown as part of the Team USA squad as well, all playing under Popovich there. So there is that chemistry that goes back a number of years now. And he's an eight-year player. He's only 28, but you could consider him a veteran in the league, really. So there's just so much upside to this potential Barnes acquisition. And I guess comparing it to the Hayward situation, it really goes back to, like you said, Larbo, it goes back to that health factor. The guy's healthy, doesn't have really an injury history. That being said, as a tragic Celtics fan, if we acquire him, I wouldn't be surprised if he got critically injured in his first game. It just feels like something that would happen to us. But I think this really, and I'm not reporting anything new here, like this is the guy to go for on so many levels.
I'm going to buy some Harrison Barnes top shots if they're available because he's going to shoot up once he's a Celtic.
Invest, yeah, before his injury.
Right.
Moving on, this is posted by user Pareo141, and it's just a post of a tweet by the Basketball Hall of Fame. Congratulations to 10-time NBA All-Star, NBA champion, and NBA Finals MVP, 21 Hoop Class finalist, Paul the motherfucking truth, Pierce, Larbird. Any surprise to you at all that Paul Pierce has been nominated for or as a finalist for the Hall of Fame?
Oh, no, of course not a surprise, but it's a stupid question. Awesome. I mean, I watched probably not necessarily every game of his career, but I watched his very first game and probably 98% of his games after that. I remember seeing his first game. He had like 15 points. We were at a sports bar in Seattle. We were actually able to watch it. So, yeah, I mean, he's my favorite player of the modern era. Love the truth. And it's great, man. It's awesome to see.
Yeah, if you walk into my house, the first thing you will see is a framed, signed Paul Pierce jersey that my wife got me for my 30th birthday. Paul Pierce is my favorite player of all time. I'm so happy to see that, but I'm not surprised that he's being nominated for the Hall of Fame. He was an insanely good scorer, a huge frustrating element to basically everyone on the Celtics currently and in years past, recent years past, is the inability to get to the free throw line. Paul Pierce, above everything else, was an absolute pro of drawing contact and getting to the free throw line. And that was a huge part of the longevity to his career and why he was able to be successful for such a long period of time and going beyond the Celtics to the Wizards and, sorry, the Nets and the Wizards and not so much the Clippers, but, you know, everyone has to wind up at some point. He was just such a pro scorer and kind of had an old man game to him as well. And as someone, I just turned 34 and happens to be Paul Pierce's number. And knowing... I have to be careful here not to like compare myself to an NBA player, but he did have a kind of like a feet on the ground old man game, and and to know that there's a style of play that exists that is maybe accessible to the lesser athletic type like myself is comforting when I go to sleep at night. So I just love Paul Pierce. I could honestly, we could do a Paul Pierce podcast. I could talk about him all night. I've seen him in the flesh play many times, and they were always awesome. And a lot of my best memories in my life revolve around Paul Pierce, to be honest. So very, very happy to see this news.
It was just an awesome, I mean, he just had an awesome story too. I mean, we early on when he got, you know, he got stabbed and we thought the worst, and then he ended up being a sort of a surprise all-star. I mean, he was the 10th pick, so not everyone really expected he was going to be that good. And just watching them those early years coming back from, you know, that kind of crazy incident, and becoming a you know, all NBA level type talent. And then, you know, honestly, there was points where we were down on Pierce, you know, where the team was struggling and he seemed like he was probably going to get moved. I know that there were several points where we considered trading him and might have actually even offered him up and had an agreement that he killed to Portland for the Chris Paul pick. Like, there's examples of these things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to go from the kind of low point and then once KG comes and winning the championship, finals MVP, I mean, it was just a really, really cool career just to see that kind of journey. And And, you know, I started watching him as a teenager when he was first coming into the league. So I felt like I kind of grew up alongside the Truth. And yeah, it was just awesome to watch.
Is there a game or a series or anything on the court as far as Paul Pierce's career is concerned that stands out to you?
Well, one of the early ones, I think it was the Nets game where I forget the, again, I don't have the stats in front of me today, but we came back from some ridiculous deficit against them in the playoffs, and him and Walker were just lighting it up. I think they were down like 25 points heading into the fourth or something. That was an awesome game. We ended up, I think, losing that series, but it was a good example of just like early Pierce just tearing up, and then you just get the sense like, dude, this guy's, his ceiling kept seeming like it was getting higher and higher. And I see a bit of that in both the Jays, you know, like both of those guys kind of following the kind of same trajectory where it's like you keep kind of raising your expectations. And that's what it was like watching the Truth.
Yeah, absolutely. That 2002 Eastern Conference Finals is critical moment in sort of Paul Pierce's early career. I've talked about the time that I watched Paul Pierce drop 40 on the Cavs from some very close baseline seats. Earlier or previously on this podcast, so I'm not going to do that again, but a game later in his career that stands out to me, I think it was in 2013, so obviously much older Paul Pierce, and he had a triple-double in a victory, in overtime victory against LeBron's Heat, and it was shortly after it was announced that Rondo was out with a torn ACL, and Paul Pierce just like played, you know, I go back to this again, like the ultimate old man game. Like I feel like his feet didn't leave the floor at all, but he was just basically playing point guard with Rondo out, so he had an insane amount of assists. He was just like a clinical basketball player and just completely controlled the game. KG was well past his physical prime at this point, and somehow Paul Pierce just willed the Celtics to a win against like an insanely dominant and inevitably or ultimately championship winning LeBron Heat team. So
I mean, that was because Rondo was a dirty Laker at heart, and losing him helped us. No, just joking. Yeah.
And despite Ray Allen being a dirty Miami Heat at heart as well, we somehow managed to get it done. Moving on, this is posted by user ChineseFox97, who wrote, "We have a young prospect at every position." And they go on to write, "Watching YouTube highlights of our young guys from Timmy's videos, and I just find it interesting that aside from our core of Smart, Jalen, and Jason, and maybe Kemba, we have a young prospect at every position. Point guard, we've got Peyton Pritchard. At the two guard, we've got Langford. Small forward, we've got Nesmith. Power forward, Grant Williams. And the center, of course, we've got Time Lord. All of those prospects are 23 and under. All of them still have potential and room to grow. Just crazy how young our bench is. We could probably trade a few of our picks and the next few years because we already have a young prospect at every position that we still need to develop." So what this user is saying is like, why are we hesitating to trade any of our first round draft picks because we've already got solid prospects at every position there, Larbird?
Yeah, it's a fair point, and assuming that the Jays are going to keep us competitive, those late firsts probably won't amount to too much. I think the biggest bummer of COVID, obviously, is that we couldn't see these guys win Summer League champion.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, right? The real championship is gone, never to be attained again. So it's a shame.
Tragic.
It's a real tragedy. Reddit user King of Pants wrote, "Yeah, our picks are super disposable. The only real reason I can see holding on to them is if the team is waiting for like the quote unquote big move there." So anything else to add there on the hoarding and or trading of first round draft picks before we move on?
It's just a weird thing that there's like so many of these recent trades, teams are just dumping out all their picks. I think the most you can give up is 4 first rounders and 3 pick swaps, and we've seen teams actually do this, and I think we have that in our back pocket, but I don't think we'd do it unless it was someone like, I think a couple of examples we've talked about on Reddit was Karl Towns, Bradley Beal, maybe one of those guys that you just unload all the picks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I had a post recently on Reddit where I was kind of pointing out that we have a very competitive trade offer for any major star that becomes available without even including the Jays. Like there's this idea that you'd have to give up Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown to get someone like Towns. Not necessarily. I mean, you can put up a really competitive package with, Marcus Smart. I don't want to lose him, but he's a valuable asset. If you include someone like Peyton Pritchard, who's now making waves as one of our top rookies in the league this year, and someone like Robert Williams, who's now making waves as a potential Clint Capela, and then you just unload all those picks. I mean, you could potentially get anyone that becomes available that hits the market, at least if they're interested in coming here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's like, you know, Ainge is taking so much flack for not giving up a monster deal like that, but we still have a monster deal that we could make.
It's an interesting segue, though. This is posted by user Bob Neal and Van, and it's an article by, I told myself I was going to remember the name and I didn't. It's an article by Chad Finn on boston.com, and I'm just going to summarize the article by reading the last paragraph, which is basically a TLDR. Basically, they round the whole thing up by saying Ainge, Danny Ainge, should hit this trade deadline with the idea of putting together the best Celtics team in a year or two, not right now. And if he really must have a veteran presence, hey, some guy named Joe Johnson was pretty good for USA Basketball's AmeriCup qualifying team a few years ago. So the title of the article is Danny Ainge Shouldn't Mortgage the Celtics' Future Trying to Save This Season. I know we've sort of covered a lot of this already, Larbird, but do you agree? Do you disagree with that? How do you feel in general about this article?
I haven't actually read that article, but it sounds very similar. And if people want to go back and listen to our last podcast, I did this whole deep dive into what a soft rebuild would look like. It's not, it's still not something that I'm pulling for, but the whole idea of that was setting up the team to be as successful as possible in 2 years and maybe kind of punting on this season to a certain extent. I don't know. I mean, it's a balance. I mean, really, I think it really just depends on what's available in this market. I mean, if they can get Barnes for really cheap, it makes sense to get him. I mean, that was kind of the thing that Ainge did that seemed to be like, you know, in 2015, where we were kind of setting out with the goal of literally tanking. And then Isaiah Thomas just became available and we were like, oh, we can get him for like nothing, like literally nothing. Sure. So I think that's just probably the approach that he still takes, where he's just remaining flexible. If he can add to this team and really make a competitive run, great. And if not, you know, maybe he just kind of sets the team up to be as competitive as possible in a couple of years. He's probably, flexibility is key. I'm hearing a lot of background noise in your thing, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. And to those people listening, it's raining and I'm in my attic below a corrugated iron roof and it's just pounding rain. Yeah, so it's almost like my full-time job is like in a tech role and there's almost like a programming element to it, like an if this then that approach. Like if something amazing comes up and we can really improve our team and increase our title chances before the trade deadline, great. But if not, let's move on. And we've got the TPE in the offseason. We've got options moving forward. And that's been pretty consistent with Danny Ainge. I know people have kind of shit on him about not making the move, but he never has kind of gone all in to the point where like we just have no other options coming up in the future. And if he doesn't make that big acquisition or trade or whatever it might be before the trade deadline, like there's still chances to improve this team going forward in the short term future. So I think a lot of people are going to be very upset if something doesn't happen, but it's not the end of hope for our short term future. Something can still be done in the near future there. So before we wrap this one up, Larbird, is there anything else you want to add on any of the points that we've got to tonight or anything else that's on your mind Celtics wise?
No, just want to once again thank Celtics Life for the time they gave us and wish them the best, like you said earlier. And I'm excited for the second half of this season. It's going to be pretty fun. I mean, the next 2 weeks in particular is going to be fun to look at all the rumors and kind of get in that, start to fantasize about what the team might be after the dust settles.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the immediate, you know, schedule for the Celtics. We're playing the Nets on Friday Australian time. I guess it's Thursday night in the US. We're playing the Nets. Kevin Durant's health is in question. I think it was recently confirmed that Marcus Smart is not going to be playing. I don't know. We're coming off a 4-game winning streak. The Nets have been hot as well. Are you confident in any way in the Celtics of maybe pulling out a win against the Nets?
Yeah, anything's possible.
Yeah, as KG once said, wise words. Okay, that's going to do it for this one. If you like what you're hearing, by the way, do us a solid. Go give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the pod, share it around, all that good stuff. Show us some love. The Celtics, like we said, have the Nets and then the Rockets coming up in the next week. We'll be back with another pod after those two games. Larbird 33, you're a legend, mate. Thanks again.
All right, man. Good night.
All right, folks. Until next time, go Celtics. Peace.